Hi, Good Muslim, Bad Muslim listeners. This is Taz, and since we last recorded our latest episode live at Yale on March 4th, a lot has changed. The very tragic and devastating mosque shootings in Christchurch, New Zealand on March 15th happened. A white supremacist who directed support to Donald Trump in his manifesto and scrawled the Quebec City shooter's name on his gun killed over 50 people and injured many more at two different mosque locations. We are so shaken by how Muslims continue to be dehumanized by the rise of the alt-right, and our hearts hurt for the victims of this terrorist attack. Please make a dua for those that have passed, attend a local vigil, and show love to a Muslim today. And now, on to our show. No burqa. Yale, Zara. What's up, Yaleys? Bulldogs, I hear.
I was going to say, it's a mascot that I don't see on a lot of shirts that say Yale.
Well, this is Taz. I'm Taz.
This is Zara. I'm Zara.
And we're so excited to be here. We're the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, live from Yale. The date is March 3rd, so we're not actually going to release this podcast for a couple weeks, so some of the news might be dated, but we'll try to keep it current.
Is there high news turnaround these days?
Who knows what could happen in the next 3 weeks?
Another extinction of another species? Probably not yet mankind.
Yeah. Iceberg might break off again.
Probably already occurring.
There's like a torrential rain downpour river happening in Northern California.
Yeah. I heard that it was like 73 degrees in Antarctica.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Because it's really cold outside here.
But actually, I heard that like 3 years ago.
Oh, okay.
So I don't even know what the state of it is now. But one of my favorite pastimes has been to just like say, I heard, and then like insert something horrific in terms of climate change, just to watch people's faces drop. Like, I would say 70% of the time I'm right.
Yeah.
Like, I'll say things like, you know, I heard the blue whale is extinct.
It's not.
It's not. But did you know for sure?
That's just lying, Zara. You're just spreading lies.
I'm encouraging people, much like our president, to pay more attention to the news.
I like how he gets to get away with just saying whatever he wants. Everyone's like, all right, we're just going to quote it in the headlines, and it's fine.
Is the big blue whale extinct? It's like, I don't get that kind of power.
No, I know. We should just claim it. Happy New Year's.
Are you going to say it the real way?
I don't know. I said it the wrong way in our last episode, so I think I need you to, like, teach me how to say it the right way.
It's Noruz. Eid Noruz Mubarak. Are there any Persians in the crowd? Nope, didn't think so. I have the love of the, like, 7 Persians now that follow us.
Yeah, that's good.
What?
It's hard for me to think of spring equinox when there's, like, 7 inches of snow outside.
I mean, I think that's so funny because that's spring for, like, so much of the planet. This is a very California thing for us to say right there.
I've been very cold for 3 days.
Like, is it really spring if it's not 90 outside?
Yeah, basically, it's not.
It's not. It's cold. And you are also an activist in residence
at
UCLA.
Yeah, that's still happening.
This is like your third month, yeah?
Yeah, third month by the time this comes out. It's going okay. I have office hours that no one comes to. What's up with students that don't go to office hours? I'm looking at the crowd now. I'm sure there's students in here. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm not teaching, so I think, like, students usually go to office hours because they're trying to get something from their professor. But I have office hours to hang out with students at UCLA, and no one's come through yet.
I was the giant nerd in college who went to every professor's office hours, like, all the time.
All the time?
Yeah, and now, after you just said that it's usually to get, like, something.
Yeah, now it's always to get something.
Now I know why everyone would always
No one wants to come to office hours just to hang out with me, which is all my office hours are.
I would.
Yeah, well.
Okay, wait, what's the UCLA, is the Bruins?
Bruins, yeah.
What is a Bruin?
It's a bear, I guess, I don't know.
Bear versus Bruin bulldog, bear. What do we think? Could the bulldog take it down? There's, like, a lot of, like,
I don't know.
Deciding. Yale is deciding. This is a very cerebral crowd.
I know.
Everybody's, like, doing serious math.
Just animals. Zara, what do you have going on?
I am working on a comedy special on behalf of all Muslims, a comedy special, because I feel like we need one. Thank you. Thank you. that's taking up my whole life right now. Yeah, of course. my fellowship on comedy.
That always takes your whole life.
Yeah. I have an article that just came out in Bustle Magazine. Go check it out. I don't know if they're going to change the headline or not. I kind of hope that they do.
Yeah, so don't mention it.
Yeah, okay. guys can go find out. But what it says, what the article says is incredibly important, and I'm very proud of it.
Yeah, that's good.
It's about how people of color and people who identify as LGBTQ and women are constantly changing the field of comedy, but because we are not cis, straight, white men, mm-hmm. we're not perceived as having the same authority over the field. And so when Louis C.K. gets up on stage and does meandering storytelling, then people say, he's innovating, he's changing the field of comedy. But when Hasan Minhaj does a storytelling mixed with stand-up comedy, then, you know, he's doing something different with comedy. Hannah Gatsby's doing something different with comedy, as opposed to innovating within the genre. Innovating within the field, I mean.
Yeah.
So that's what the article is about. I sound very smart in it. And you should share it. thank you. Thank you.
Let's jump into the hot topics.
Let's do it.
It's March, which means we have switched into Women Month, Women History Month, Women Empowerment Month, something like
that. What are we calling it now?
Yeah. I don't know.
Women, right now, like it's
every month is
month.
Something now, right? So, but this month is about women.
What do we have, Yael? What is it?
Women's History Month.
Is it Women's History Month?
There is one woman I want to talk about. I want to talk about Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. Like I said, we're in the beginning of March. And she is just being thrown under the bus right now, and it's really terrible.
Uh-oh, tell me.
The West Virginia Congress, they had an event. The Republicans took over the Capitol building for a day, and they put up this terrible image, this poster of Congresswoman Omar and the 9/11 towers falling. And they said something about how Muslims like you and terrorists like you are responsible for this. So it was terrible, but because the Republicans had taken over the Capitol for the day, I guess the Republicans do it and then the Democrats do it. Because that had happened, the Democrats were trying to push back and say, like, you can't do this. And it was just so bad. She's basically just being really hammered into because obviously she's a black Muslim woman in hijab in the Capitol, and people are putting a big target on her. It's very scary.
She tweeted, I'm told every day that I'm anti-American if I'm not pro-Israel. I find that to be problematic, and I'm not alone. I just happen to be willing to speak up on it and open myself to attacks. My Americanness is questioned by the president and the GOP on a daily basis, yet my colleagues remain silent. I know what it means to be American, and no one will ever tell me otherwise.
And today's March 4th, and the Democrats in the National Congress are releasing a statement about this incident. So by the time this episode comes out, I'm not actually sure what's going to happen, but I'm pretty sure the Democrats are also going to throw her under the bus with the statement that's coming out today.
It's really chilling to hear her say that her colleagues are not stepping up to support her.
Are you surprised? I'm not surprised.
I actually am.
You are? I'm not surprised.
I thought that there would be like some kind of concerted effort, like even however they're going to contort it, to do something.
I feel like in Congress right now, we have like AOC, Rashida, and Ilhan, and whoever the Native American woman is, they have this like crew, they have a posse of freshmen, you know, Congress women. But I think the old dogs in Congress are just kind of like, let's just fold down to the lobbyists.
Gross.
Yeah.
What do we do about that?
Well, I think at this point, last month there was a lot of like giving of love to Ilhan. Like we mentioned in our last episode, there was a group of people that sent Valentine's Day cards to the Congresswoman. But I think at this point, it's time for us to call our representatives to make sure that they show their support for Ilhan and that we won't stand for Islamophobia from the Democrats in Congress.
I think that absolutely needs to happen so that it's really clear what a baseline for a conversation is in a political arena.
Yeah, I feel like the baseline for political conversations has kind of been thrown out.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
With Trump in office.
Did you know the blue whale?
Yeah, that is where the baseline is right now. is having Trump say, how's there global warming? Do you see how cold it is outside?
The polar vortex. Yeah, I don't. It just continues to get terrifying because I also see what's happening in China.
Yeah,
with the re-education camps, the Uyghur camp. The Uyghur re-education camps?
Uyghur people have great food, by the way. I just need to put that in there.
Yeah.
There's a great Uyghur restaurant in Los Angeles, which was delicious.
How come you don't take me?
We tried, and then it was like closed or something.
Don't lie. We're in front of people.
Delicious.
Yum. And food is supposed to solve racism. What's happening?
I know.
Right? That's how it works. By the way, that's a huge laugh for our like listening at home audience. That's like we have a mighty audience of 12 people, and when 10 of them laugh, it still sounds quiet. Thank you.
But you know, Yale students are doing something about the situation with the Uyghurs.
What are y'all doing? I want to hear about this.
Yeah, so this article in the Yale Daily News says that there's a student group here on campus. The student group is divided into three subgroups, and each is tasked with tackling a different area of the problem. So one group provides aid to Uyghurs living in the United States who are in need of asylum application. Another group is working towards running phone banks and pushing Congress to support bills. And the third group is working on the broader Yale community response to the events occurring in Zhanjiang, which I believe is where the re-education camp is.
This is a Black Mirror episode, basically.
It is a Black Mirror episode. It's frightening. There's no Facebook, there's no Twitter in China, right? They have to do like underground ways of doing social media. So these camps are so isolated, there's no way to get researchers there to look at the camps. All we're getting is like Google satellite photos of where the camps are. They're telling us this re-education camps, and they're like saying, they're just like renaming it different things, right? So it's just so complicated. I mean, the issue isn't complicated, but it's like so difficult to get the truth out of what's happening. And it's ridiculous.
I'm just remembering like my trip and just the rhetoric around what they refer to as the Muslim quarters that we went to go visit.
Oh, right, because you went to China.
And it was like, and I can't remember the city that we were in, but it was the Muslim quarters, and the rhetoric was very familiar.
Yeah.
Eating up our welfare resources.
Right.
Ne'er-do-wells who, you know, aren't motivated because they get so much support from the government. And it was like, oh, this sounds really familiar. Why am I hearing this from my tour guide? Like, it's okay to say.
Didn't he not know there were Muslims in the tour?
I don't think it mattered. I think that this is something that we're dealing with here with this community, you know, which is like when it's that, you know, quote unquote mainstream to remark about it that way.
Yeah.
And that was 2 years ago.
It's definitely been getting worse over the past 2 years.
I feel like a lot of what's happening in China and in India with Muslim communities is basically like beta testing for this country.
Yeah, I see it more as like a global Islamophobia epidemic. Like Muslims are just being used as a tool to fearmonger globally.
That actually sounds pretty damn accurate.
Yeah, because we're seeing it everywhere. We're seeing it in India. There's lynch mobs happening in India over like people eating beef, allegedly. And then they're not really eating beef, but they don't have proof, but they saw it on a Facebook news piece. So then
and that's
they're sending
why they
people.
Need to be lynched? Yeah, sure. Okay.
So we're seeing it there. We're seeing it in China, and then we're seeing in the U.S.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it's become like a talking point like it is about immigrants, right? Like it's a, you know, oh, here's another thing that we hate, right, everybody? And then, you know, shortcut the messaging machine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm nauseous. How about everybody else? Yeah, all right. Lovely. On that note, some fun Persian shenanigans from our nation.
Yeah. Can I Venmo you some money for like this like Nowruz party we're going to be having?
Please don't do that.
I'll hashtag it Persian shenanigans.
No, definitely don't do that. if you could, please hashtag it MAGA MAGA MAGA. And send it to me that way. On Venmo, Persians, not just as a hashtag, but as a word, is being flagged and reported.
Yeah. How many of you have used Venmo before? Yeah? You know, you go to a party or a dinner party and you like Venmo your friend money to pay for dinner. Don't go to a Persian restaurant and put that in your Venmo.
It will get flagged. Yeah. There's a petition put together thanks to Mona Sabouri and Aisha Irfan who brought this to light via mpowerchange.org/Venmo. You can go visit that site. That's the letter M, powerchange.org/Venmo. There's a petition you can sign. And Taz, you were mentioning these like private businesses really listen to these petitions.
Yeah, private businesses, I mean, because the question from the audience is, why is this happening? It's happening because private businesses, they don't want Venmo to be used for terrorist activities, right? So they're saying like, oh, if you just say Persian, maybe we won't get flagged for terrorist activities, which, I mean, obviously, if you're going to do terrorism, you're just not going to flag it, tag it with Persian, right? You're not going to say, this is for a bomb. Thanks, Venmo. Like, that's not going to happen.
On behalf of all Persians. Prada, 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 Prada. Okay, like, what floors me about that is that back in the 80s, the tactic to evade a lot of hate crimes was to say you're Persian, because they didn't know where that was.
Right.
You could say Persian and connect with a cultural identity rather than a political one and avoid hate crimes.
Sure.
If people heard that you were Iranian. Now, that safeguard is just gone.
Gone, yeah.
And so I'm curious what is going to happen for white passing Iranians who see that as their one viable strategy to avoid racism and hate.
Yeah. They're just going to mark themselves white on the census.
Just keep saying. Just on so I guess on Venmo, when you Venmo Persian, just hashtag Persian, hashtag white, hashtag this is my strategy.
Because one of the things that is actually on a serious note, the KKK and white supremacist groups are not being flagged on Venmo. Only Persian is being flagged on Venmo. So you can say this money's for the KKK and you're not going to get flagged.
Oh, got it. So I can go to a Persian restaurant and then hashtag KKK,
yep,
hashtag MAGA, and I'm all good.
You're good.
What?
Yeah. So there's like a double standard thing happening there too out of this. So, yeah.
So when you sign this petition, what you're saying is don't criminalize transactions because of the perceived religion or ethnicity of the user and the practice of flagging transactions with Persia and any other terms commonly associated with Muslims and Islam that are currently being flagged. And that's something that everybody needs to do right now who's listening to the podcast.
Yeah, because this doesn't just affect Persians. I think the double standard that the KKK can get away with this kind of stuff, I mean, get away, because I mean...
Is it a double standard? I feel like it's a standard that they're very clearly setting. That sounds like...
Is the KKK Venmoing? Like, do they... Does it, you know.
Does the KKK Venmo?
Hmm.
So, I mean, Peter Thiel, what are you doing?
I'm looking for a white hood. Here's my $60. I don't know. You know? Like.
Hashtag Persia. Oh, no. Damn it. That was autocorrect.
On that note, let's take a break.
All right.
As a brown girl, navigating how to get birth control has always been so, so awkward. Luckily now, we have Simple Health. They're here to make your health care, you guessed it, simple. They're starting out by simplifying birth control access with online prescriptions and home delivery. Did you know over 20 million women in America lack reasonable access to something as basic and fundamental as contraception? And though the perception is that Muslim women have to deal with a lot of religious and racial stigmas associated with birth control, studies show that American Muslim women's contraception use share similarities with American women in general and with disadvantaged minority groups. With Simple Health, you can get your birth control prescribed online and delivered to your door for free. It's affordable, convenient, and safe. Here's how it works. You fill out a comprehensive online health profile and answer some questions formulated to get the best birth control for you. Your body, your preferences, your insurance situation, they take it all into account. A medical doctor will review your profile, figure out if you're a good candidate for birth control, recommend a product, and write a prescription. Then your birth control ships to your door on a reoccurring schedule. No interruptions. Best of all, Simple Health offers affordable care regardless of insurance. They do accept insurance, and luckily, birth control is free with most insurance plans, so you can pay absolutely nothing to use the service every month. For those without insurance, pills start at $15 a month, so it's still super affordable, and delivery is free for everyone. The prescription is usually $20, but good Muslim, bad Muslim listeners can try Simple Health for free. Just go to simplehealth.com/good or enter the code GOOD at checkout. I want to mention that this isn't a replacement for routine evaluations by your primary care physician or gynecologist, which you still need, but it is the most convenient and comfortable way to get your birth control. Again, don't miss your chance to try Simple Health for free. Go to simplehealth.com/good or just enter the code G-O-O-D at checkout.
And we're back to Yale!
It's time for Awkward Ask a Muslim test.
It is time for Awkward Ask a Muslim.
What you got?
This was a weird awkward ask because the question didn't really happen to me, but I was at a cafe in LA and I was trying to work and there was this girl that was sitting across from me who was white and she had like really bright red hair and she was kind of flirting with a guy sitting next to her, which I think she knew because of course I'm eavesdropping in this conversation because that's what you do in cafes.
That's legit.
And then she is in a coffee shop and she pulls out this Tupperware and she starts eating it while she's doing her work and then the guy leans over really close to her because I couldn't tell if he was flirting with her or not. Anyways, he leans over, really close. I was trying to dissect this meet cute or not unmeet cute that was happening.
Was it like you were kind of like, if it wasn't between them, then you might make a move? Like, was that
no,
a fact?
No, definitely not. But they were so loud, it was hard for me to focus on my own work. And then he looks over at her Tupperware and he's like, "What are you eating?" And I look over at her Tupperware and she's just eating khichdi, which is like this food that I make, this comfort food at home. It's just rice and lentils.
Yeah.
And she goes, "Oh, it's this healing food that's Ayurvedic, and it comes from this far-off exotic land in the Far East, and your body's going to turn to gold." I don't know. She was just kind of like...
"Where they cut off your ear if they don't like your face. It's not perfect, but hey, it's home. Prince Ali, fabulous,
yeah,
he, Ali Ababa."
And I'm sitting there. I'm like, does she realize she's sitting next... Like, I'm listening to her. Like, don't say that in front of a brown person. And I just wanted to jump in and be like, it's just lentils and rice. It's not... And then, you know, I tweeted this and people were like, lentils and rice actually do have Ayurvedic properties. I was I don't care. I know they have Ayurvedic property because this is comfort food. This is our chicken soup, right? Like, this is what mom makes for you when you're sick. So I know it's got healing properties. It's just so obnoxious that she was saying instead of just saying it's like rice and lentils, she's like, it's Ayurvedic. And then he's like, what's that thing in there? She's like, oh, it's this Ayurvedic spice.
You're going to get so many emails.
And then she goes on and talks about how, oh yeah, I've been taking these Instapot cooking classes on Ayurvedic cooking and I paid $50 for this class. And I was like, that's it. That is my business. I'm going to trick people into Instapot classes.
Yes.
To learn, teach them how to make khichdi. Like, how basic is that? Like, I can make a bank in LA.
Yeah, girl, get that green.
I'm going to get that green. I first need to get an Instapot. I need to learn how
to
push the buttons. There's a lot of buttons on that.
I got one for Christmas. I don't know what to do with it. I'll hand it to you.
I have a class you could take. It's $50 a class.
I'm looking for a class that's going to put the mysteries of the East into my Instapot. Do you have that class?
Yeah, I'll learn real fast. I'll teach you Ayurvedic properties.
I only pay in magical gold.
I decided also that this is going to be the pilot that I'm going to write. I'm going to write a pilot based on this experience. Not like me being in a cafe, but I'm going to write a pilot about being an Instapot khichdi teacher where I teach vegan white people to come in and give them exotic healing properties. And that's going to be the premise for my pilot.
Oh, that's how you're going to meet the significant.
Totally.
He's going to be a brown guy that overhears it, and he's going to be like, really?
Yeah, and then he comes in, and he learns, and that's the meet cute. It's either going to be a TV pilot, or it's going to be an erotica short story. I haven't decided yet, because I feel like it could go either way.
It really could. But is it going to be a Muslim Christmas rom-com special?
Of course.
Oh, okay.
Of course.
If it's Taz, it's Muslim Christmas.
Yeah, always.
24/7, all the time.
What's your awkward ask?
My awkward ask is nowhere near as exciting. My awkward ask was being discredited by another comedian.
I'm not that surprised.
I know.
I feel like this happens all the time.
We're kind of assholes to each other.
Yeah.
Just in general.
Well, not just comedians. I feel generally, people discredit women of color all the time.
Well, I was in this like group of women in comedy. Like, we were just kind of talking at a cafe, and I just, like, you know, I'm doing this work for the collaborative, and I wanted to hear, like, you know, what are some challenges and things. And they were insisting that, like, the shifts couldn't happen in the industry, and that anything to benefit the stand-up comedy pipeline that goes from the bar scene to commercial television recognition that takes between 4 to 8 years. Mm-hmm. For any given comedian, is depleting the talent pool of people of color because it starts out in a bar scene. So if within those first 2 years, or even 2 to 4 years, if you really stick it out, you can't find your way to sort of like establishing your voice, then you leave, you quit, or you get relegated to the world of one-person shows.
Yeah.
And then you're still not labeled a stand-up comedian, you're labeled a person doing one-person shows.
Yeah.
And it's just a different formula, it's a different template. And she said, you're just a San Francisco comic that gave up too early and doesn't know that it isn't a binary when it comes to audiences.
Oh.
Yeah.
When did you give up? Like, what?
Yeah.
You, like, literally just moved to LA to pursue this.
I mean, I've only been doing stand-up comedy for 15 years.
Yeah.
But I gave up because I didn't stick it out in the stand-up comedy bar circuit.
Oh.
You can do peripheral ventures, but you need to stay at the bar.
That's so dumb.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I have a fellowship, to change it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Right. Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
So dumb.
Also, like, I find it hilarious that, like, she hasn't considered that, like, maybe outside of a bar scene, it is possible that I've had cross-audience testing, just not via the stand-up comedy pipeline.
Yeah.
Like, and have done stand-up at museums.
Yeah.
In theater spaces, at 20 campuses across the nation.
At events.
Like
coffee shops.
3,000 people, 500 people, 7 people who don't care at a laundromat. Like, I've had the gamut. Like, that's what you do. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's your job as a comedian. And I've learned how to gain these skill sets by being kind of a latchkey kid in comedy, you know, and creating basically my own pipeline so that I build those skill sets. But just because I haven't been in the bar scene, that's it. That's what that means.
I just, as a non-drinker, like, I just find that super annoying because I really don't go to bars unless a friend wants to hang out, because that's not, I don't want to be surrounded by alcohol like that.
If you want to go see a comedy show, where do you go?
I go see shows that Disoriented Comedy is putting together, which are these, like, you know, underground spaces and community kind of clubs.
I just love that that's the only one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, no other comedy shows?
Mm-mm. Because there's too many white people at the other ones. And I don't want to have to, like, deal with a microaggression on my night out.
Well, and what happens a lot of the time for people of color who do venture into the comedy club is they get seated in the front so that they get picked on.
Oh, yeah. I don't like that either.
And that, like, that's also really alienating. Yeah. So, okay, so here's the thing. If, like, folks like you aren't going to comedy clubs, right?
But then, I watch a lot of comedy shows, and I watch comedy movies, and I spend a lot of money on comedy.
But everywhere that a comedian is learning how to shape their material is at the club. So the material that you like or don't like is being shaped before it gets to you mm-hmm. on network and streaming television. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You guys see what I'm saying? Y'all see what I'm saying?
Yeah. But I think what people like me are supposed to do is support comedians that perform in non-comedy, non-bar spaces, which is what I would, will do.
Yes,
you know?
Go to all those festivals. Like you guys, also being here.
Yeah,
for our live tapings.
Go support comedians that aren't at bars, because I think that's just as necessary. Like, your argument for me to go to bars is not working. The argument to support comedians who are performing in other spaces is working.
Excellent. Also, it gets worse. Then they say, you know, also, I don't think you're really doing your research, because there are so many Muslims in comedy right now. And then they name, you know, Mo Amer and Rami Youssef and Maysoon and Dino Bidala and Asif Manvi and Nagin, and that's it, we're done, right?
You're like, oh yeah, like all the people we already know, like we know them.
Yeah, we got 6-7 people. What's the matter? What do you need? Why are you complaining?
How many white comics are there?
Let's see.
Is there 7? Oh wait, there's more than 7? More than 7 white male comics? What?
I mean, there's just such a gamut of experience. Yeah.
Oh, identity politics.
Exactly. Which, by the way, is an amazing podcast that you should listen to. All right, it's time for some creeping Sharia. This is your moment, guys. This is your moment. Ready?
Creeping Sharia!
That's pretty awesome. What you got in creeping Sharia, Taz?
Okay, so for my creeping Sharia, which I don't know if it really counts, but I'm going to count it. I landed in Boston before I came to Yale, and when I landed, I took a Lyft. And my driver was in his car, and he gets out of the car, and when he gets out of his car, he kind of just, like, looks at me, like, with really wide open eyes, like he just saw a ghost or something. And then I get into the car, and I was like, I didn't say anything. I was like, because I don't like having conversations with people. So I like, kept it quiet. He's like, oh, so your name is Tanzila, huh? And that's my proper name, and that's the name on my Lyft. And I was like, yeah. He's like, that's my great-grandmother's name. I was like, okay. And he started going off into this story. He's like, my mother's family, they come from Eastern Europe and this land called Belarus, and they belong to the tribe called Tatars. The Tatars had come over there with Genghis Khan back in the days because they were like Genghis Khan's soldiers, and then they just ended up just staying in Belarus as a soldier group for Belarus.
What?
I know, I got this whole, like, history lesson on, like, this, like, small tribal community.
Was it anything that you recognize?
I have never heard of the Tatars, have you?
No.
Yeah, I didn't know this was a Muslim group to
keep an eye out. I barely know where Persians are from. Don't hashtag that on Venmo.
Yeah, it was a really interesting conversation. He just kept going on and on and on. And I don't know, I feel like that's pretty creeping Sharia, you know, like every Uber driver is Muslim, secretly.
Yes. I love that he was, like, so excited to share this with you.
He was so excited. But honestly, he did look like he saw a ghost when he saw me. And, like, he's just like, that's my great-grandmother's name. I was just like, oh.
But, I mean, is your name not a common name?
It's not a common name. I've never met another Tanzila.
Oh.
It comes from Surah Yasin in the Quran. And it means something that's heaven sent, something that's Tanzil, or has the quality of descending from heaven.
So what if, like, I mean, you were living into your name in that moment?
What do you mean? Like, reincarnated? Or
I was thinking more like, is the guy single?
Oh, no. No.
It's just trying to create a meet cute in my head.
I thought there was potential, but he kind of started talking about politics, and that always goes downhill after that.
Oh, no! Why?
Right?
Well, I'm so curious. What was the, like, breadcrumb?
The line of conversation was he was trying to become an American citizen, right? Because he's trying to get green card. And I was like, well, yeah, good luck with that with Trump in office. He's like, what? It doesn't say Muslim anywhere on my passport, and, like, it doesn't have any proof. I was like, the government knows. They watch. They, like, are going to do research. And he's like, well, I'm, you know, I can get away with, like, passing, right, basically. You know, I was like, that is not the kind of person I'm going to date in my life, Zara.
Yeah.
What's your creeping Sharia?
Oh, it's always, like, so depressing when people think that passing is a real strategy. Mm. All right, my creeping Sharia. Mahershala Ali's outfit at the Oscars.
Yeah.
And his Jenna cap.
I don't think it was a Jenna cap. Can I describe the outfit for people?
Please.
Okay, so he's wearing kind of like this black beanie. It looks like a beanie. And then he's wearing like serial killer glasses. Like those wire-framed gold glasses. Which
this
I think... There's
a combination of descriptions.
Yeah.
All right.
And then he's wearing like this button-down shirt with like a little black button, which... up top, just one, like a, not like a lapel collar, but like no collared collar.
Yeah.
And then I think he was wearing that under like a tuxedo jacket.
Yeah.
So that was his outfit.
Sounds Muslim-y to me.
I guess so. I mean, like, it was one of those outfits where if it was on any other person, you would be like, that is ugly combination. And you're like, it's on Mahershala Ali, and you're like, that is so hot.
Yep.
Right?
He just pulls it off.
He pulls it off.
I think also it's a white woman who made the cap.
Yeah, I think that was what was really interesting to me. Because in the end, it turned out that his cap was rabbit fur. It's a rabbit fur cap that cost $350.
Whoa!
Made by a white woman. So then it comes into this conversation of, like, what is fashion appropriation and what does it represent, you know?
How about we just distill it? down to, he wore a Jenna cap, and that's my creeping Sharia.
Okay, we could do that.
Sweet. All right, it's fatwa time.
Yeah, let's go with your fatwa first.
All right, I'm fatwaing Russian dolls.
Like the TV show on Netflix? Because I thought that was pretty good.
No, the concept. I love the TV show, by the way.
The concept of like wooden dolls inside of wooden dolls inside of wooden dolls inside of wooden dolls.
Yes, the narrative concept.
Okay, you're going to have to explain this one to me.
All right, go with me on this. All right, have you guys been watching The Trial? The Trial? Is it the Mueller trial?
Yeah, it's the Cohen trial.
How does this shit work? I thought all of this was his job. I genuinely don't know how my government functions.
You and everyone the unravel- else here.
Yeah.
You and the president.
In the unraveling of it, I am learning a great deal. Yeah. Okay, wait.
It wasn't a real trial. It was more like a hearing because what Cohen was doing was giving a testimony in front of Congress.
Yes.
So it's not like an actual like courtroom trial.
Yes. And then the Republicans were saying he's a trash guy. We're using him as evidence, right? And Republicans were distancing themselves and then saying that like, you know, also he was like Trump's lawyer.
Yes.
Right? So like, okay, so the tactic I'm seeing is that they're saying we're distancing ourselves from this guy who's giving his testimony on, about our Republican president.
Yes.
Because he's a trash guy anyway, and so you can't listen to anything he says. Also, he's just Trump's lawyer. He doesn't actually work as part of the government.
Okay.
That's what they're saying, right?
Yeah.
Is that an accurate recap?
Sure.
Yeah? Everyone's if it's inaccurate, I will say, Yale backed me up.
And Yale is smart, so.
Yeah, all right.
If they don't say anything.
I got nods of approval. So, all right. What they're basically saying is, like, just take all of his testimony about his illegal activity that's coming from his lawyer and put it in a little bottle and put that inside of another little bottle and we'll just, you know, toss it all to Russia and move on.
So what are we fatwaing?
The creation of a new fallacy that I'm referring to as the Russian doll. Dismount. It's a narrative and a narrative and a narrative and a narrative that makes no sense in the first place, stacked on top of each other, that they're chucking, that they're not allowed to chuck.
Yeah, I would say what I'm getting from what you're saying is nonsense is fatwaed.
Sure, okay.
Nonsense, like ridiculousness. I mean, I think also this, like, narrative inside of narrative, it's just, like, causing confusion. Like, there's nothing linear about it. So people are just getting, because it's so confusing now, people are
it's
just kind of
so
like.
It's so contorted.
Yeah.
And they continue to contort what is already contorted
totally.
So that you can't, exactly like you said, there's no linear trace to argument.
Yep.
That's a mess. And it's a tactic, and it's a brilliant one. And as a Persian conspiracy theorist, I laud it. At the same time, it's inappropriate, and I fought with that. On behalf of Yale.
My fatwa.
All right, let's hear it.
Is changing at yoga, like
what
okay,
is, like
so
affirmations?
Like
what are you talking about?
So like I went to yoga because my acupuncturist says that I need to like stretch my chest
you
out.
Went to yoga?
I know I'm a big spin class person. I don't really I'm not into the yoga stuff mainly because you know I'm a brown person and when I go to yoga and it's a room full of white people doing yoga, they look to me like I'm supposed to be the expert and I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm like the one brown person in the room who's like not able to stand on my one leg with its other foot sticking out over my head. And like, I'm not very bendy, okay? It's not a thing that I do. And I just feel so judged in most yoga spaces. So anyways, I went because my acupuncturist told me to go.
All right.
And I go into this one yoga class. And at first, like, because I'm the first one there, I'm like, okay, this is going to be good. This class is, like, good vibes. And the guy walks in, and he, like, whips out a harmonium, which is, like, kind of a hard thing to whip because they're very big.
Yeah.
And I actually wanted to buy a harmonium, and I've been looking at them on Amazon. They're, like, $400. They're really pricey.
Oh, my God.
And so he's, like, this kind of, like, very, like, gentle white guy. And then because I was the first one in the room, like, 5 minutes into, like, the first session, I look around the room, I was like, holy crap, I'm the only brown person here. I was like, okay, this is going to be interesting. I was like, no, I'm just going to ignore all the weird things and just go with it because I need a stretch and I need the exercise. And then it was not the typical flow, like, exercise yoga. It was like a chill one, which is what it's called, chill.
What, it was chill yoga?
Yeah, it was called chill yoga. Because I am in California, and this is a thing that happens there. And then, like, near the end of the class, like, we're lying down, we're stretching our backs. He starts, like, playing the harmonium and starts, like, just, like, chanting, like, Hanuman, Jai, Shreya. Like, he just starts naming all these, like, Indian god names without, they make no sense. Like, I don't speak Hindi, but, like, I know enough to know that, like, nothing he's saying is a sentence. And he's just saying words. And I'm like, okay, I'm supposed to, like, open my chest up and have gratitude, but yet I'm so feeling microaggressed by this chanting that's happening.
So, okay, in translation, is it basically like if he was like, Thomas Aquinas, bells jingle, halls deck?
Yeah, basically, just like a stream of words. But they were all like, they weren't even just like a stream of words. They were like names of gods just kind of like streamed all together.
Matthew, Paul, Peter.
Yeah.
Other white boys' names that I know.
Yeah.
Travis Chad.
I was not relaxed after that class. I had no open heart chest thing happening. I want to talk about that. Talk about chanting at yoga. Like, let's just do like regular, like, I'm okay with Om. I'm okay with like just like the basic ones. But once it turns into this like singing, songing, like,
it sounds like fatwaing the appropriation of chanting.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, well, also just saying words that don't make a sentence when chanting.
Two fatwas in one. I dig it.
Yeah.
Do you want to up it? You want to Russian doll that shit?
No.
All right.
Do you have a good Muslim award?
It's time for good
segment.
Muslim awards. We give out good Muslim awards at the end. My good Muslim award goes out to the women Aisha Irfan and Mona Sabri, who went to Empower Change about the Venmo hashtagging.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, because, you know, it's like, I always want to highlight the times when Iranian people are entering into the intersectional mix.
Yeah.
And I want to see us doing a lot of that, a lot more of that. And that was awesome that they brought it to Empower for Change.
What I love about that story is because I also work at a digital media organization called 18 Million Rising, and we also do petitions, is that groups like 18 Million Rising and Empower Change, we really depend on the community to come to us with different issues so that we can create petitions. So to piggyback on your Good Muslim Award, I want to encourage everyone to approach their local organizations so that we can, one campaign at a time, fight for good.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, that's a yeah, shout that's out good. Right there.
Yeah.
Give it up. All right. What's your good Muslim award?
Okay. My good Muslim award is going to the movie Gully Boy, which I just watched. It was so, so good. It's like a Bollywood 8 Miles Muslim version.
Bollywood 8 Mile Muslim version.
So you know 8 Miles?
No.
You know Eminem?
No.
Zara.
Oh, Eminem, like, what's my name? Eminem.
Yeah, that's the rap that I'm talking about.
What, Eminem, what, how does that song go?
I feel like you're...
What, my name is, so something, something, Slim Shady.
Yes.
Yeah, that guy. Oh, yeah. I remember high school.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he had a movie about his rap journey called 8 Miles.
He's still alive. Good for
him. He's still alive. I love how we always have to explain, like, pop culture references to Zara before we jump into these things. I'm like, okay,
just,
you
music?
Know,
just music?
Just music.
Just anything related to music in any way, shape, or form.
So this movie takes place in a Muslim slum in Bombay.
Okay.
And this guy, he like gets really into Nas, and like listens to Nas on like headphones, and he discovers like this other rapper, and he's like, oh my gosh, Indians can rap too, and then he starts like rapping too,
nice.
And then they like have get involved in this like rap competition, and they want to. The competition is they get to open for Nas, and it talks about that journey of becoming a rapper, but he like lives in the slums of Bombay, so he has to, you know, fight for his mom. He starts doing crime. He has a secret Muslim girlfriend who's like going to be a surgeon, and it was just like a really good narrative.
Sounds like an amazing movie. What is it called again?
Gully Boy.
Good Muslim Award.
Good Muslim Award. I would say the Good Muslim, I'd give the Good Muslim Award to the director and writer, Zoya Akhtar, who is a Muslim woman in Bombay.
Yeah.
The thing that kind of bugs me is that the two main actor and actress, the protagonist and the love interest, is Ranveer Singh and Alia Bhatt, who are both like amazing Bollywood actors. They're not Muslim. So I just want to get to the point where in Bollywood, we can finally have Muslim actors and actresses portray Muslim people.
But Priyanka Chopra is doing such great work.
We do not talk about Priyanka Chopra on the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast. Especially after having Modi at her wedding. She is not to be talked about here.
Oh my God. So much nausea in an episode.
Go watch Gully Boy, people. Tell us what you think. Use the hashtag Good Muslim, Bad Muslim and let us know what you think.
Yeah. I think that closes out our show.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Anything? A little serious.
Anything we should say on our way out? Happy New Year's.
Well, yeah. How do you greet people on this spring equinox celebration?
Oh, okay. Let's see if we could do this. I would normally say Eid Shomom Mubarak.
Eid Shomom Mubarak.
And then the recipient would say Dombe Shoma Secharek.
Dombe Shome
Shoma
Se
Charek.
Chorak.
Charek.
Chorak.
Charak.
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 Okay, so let's say, Eid Shoma Mubarak. And then you'll say, Dombe. Shoma.
Se.
Charak.
Charak.
Merci, Orbanet. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. That's a show.
Thank you. Yay.
Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Norbash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar, that's TAZZYSTAR, and Zara at Zara Comedy, that's ZAHRA Comedy. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Sarasmith, and you can find us on the web at goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim. Good Muslim, Bad Muslim is a proud member of Potluck, a collective that features stories and voices from the Asian American community.
Holy
Potluck.
Potluck.
On behalf of all Persians, Prada, 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 Prada.